It is 3:06 on Friday afternoon. The weekend is rapidly approaching, but standing in the way of the weekend for at least a couple of the people around this table here at Political Rewind today is crossover day at the Capitol and a very long day still ahead. Jim Galloway, political writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, just told us that the House Rules Committee has just added at 3 o'clock 30 more bills to their calendar for today.
Yeah, we may be going until just a little bit before midnight,
sounds,
I think.
Sounds like it. Julianne Thompson, who's a Republican strategist, she's been an officer in the Georgia Republican Party. You said, Julianne, you rushed over here, you've been down at the Capitol all day, and you're heading right back there after this show.
I sure am.
What are you watching?
Well, I'm watching a couple different pieces of legislation today, most especially Marcy's Law, which is an elevation of statutory to constitutional Bill of Rights for victims of violent crimes.
And help us make sure our listeners know what that would mean.
Well, what that would mean is taking what we currently have in statute in Georgia and raising it to a constitutional level, which is not currently the case, and making a level playing field for victims of violent crimes without stepping on any of the rights of the accused.
Okay, where does that stand? That still has to, that has not.
Floor, it's on the floor.
We'll remind everybody that crossover day is, it's a day set in rules by the legislature. It's a deadline that establishes a bill has got to have passed one house and be on its way to the other, or else it can no longer be considered during the current session.
Now, that's the rule in capital letters and the fine print. There are all sorts of ways around it.
Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit about that. Billy Linville, Democratic strategist. Billy was a part of the Roy Barnes administration. Feels like a long time ago at this point, Billy, doesn't it?
It was a long time ago.
Are you tracking legislation right now, or have you moved on to loftier matters?
Mainly, I'm just hoping that the legislature does as little damage as possible.
Okay. By the way, we've got a lot to talk about in terms of crossover day. We're going to talk about certainly the latest in what is becoming a bigger and bigger story, as you all know, out of Washington, whether the Trump team, what kind of interactions they've had with the Russians during the election. We'll talk about Jeff Sessions, the attorney general. The big story that just crossed over is that Arnold Schwarzenegger has just announced he's not coming back for a second year on The Apprentice. He blames Trump for the show's inability.
Who is the executive producer?
That's exactly right. Well, you know, for those people who are worried about Donald Trump conflicts of interest, perhaps if The Apprentice goes away, that'll be one less thing that people will complain about. All right, let's get serious. Lisa Raham, GPB's reporter at the state capitol, has been down there all day tracking the activities, and she joins us now by phone. Hey, Lisa, thanks for joining us for a couple minutes.
Thank you. I'm standing here in the dome now in between both chambers, and as you can imagine, a lot of hustle and bustle is taking place here this afternoon. The halls are filled with lobbyists trying to bend the ear of lawmakers during this very important day.
We're going to try to reconnect with Lisa. You could all hear that was not a particularly good connection, so we'll try to get her back on the phone. While we do, Jim, let me start with you. The first thing I was going to ask Lisa, of course, is on this show on Monday, I said unequivocally the casino bill was dead for the session. And you said, not so fast. These things are never quite dead. I scoffed at your analysis. And as usual, I was wrong and you were right. Tell us what happened now happened.
Okay, what happened was last night, the House the previous action had been all on the Senate side. Last night, the House Regulated Industries Committee put out its agenda. It included HB 158. That's the Ron Stevens House bill on casino gambling. They were supposed to address it about noon today. They pulled it back because it didn't have the votes. And now we've got the speaker saying that, don't bet on it. We probably won't see it.
So the same thing, basically, Julianne and Billy, happened in the House side that happened in the Senate side. On the Senate side, Brandon Beach, who was pushing that bill, tried to get it into committee and to get a vote to bring it out of committee. He failed to muster the number of votes he needed to do that, so he withdrew it. Now over on the House side, the same exact thing happens. There aren't enough votes, apparently, to get it out of committee, so they pull it back there, too. So, this does appear now at last it's not going anywhere, although there's hours left in the session.
I think it's dead for this year, and I believe that the proponents of gaming made the same mistake they did last year. Something this consequential, which entails changing the Constitution in a statewide referendum, to pass something like this, you have to bring in the people of Georgia, and the legislators there have to hear from their constituents. I think the proponents, again, this year tried to keep it inside the Capitol, behind closed doors, and I just don't think this day and age that you can pass something like this without involving the people.
So when I hear you say that, I hear you suggest that it would have been good to have citizens who favored casino gambling down there. Julianne, on the conservative side of this, you work with a number of conservatives on the religious right off mm-hmm. and on. Were they mobilized at all against this bill?
Well, no,
citizens?
They were very mobilized against this bill. But I agree 100% with everything that Billy just said. I mean, I think that the big failure was the fact that they didn't include the citizens. They didn't get any feedback. They'll say that they did traveling, but how much listening did they actually do? And people really didn't feel that they had any sort of buy-in or ownership in this. And yes, the conservative religious right did come out in massive numbers at the state capitol to testify against this. But I've seen them come out in larger numbers for things in the past. So I don't think it was just the religious right that killed this. I think Billy is 100% correct. But though the destination resorts may be dead this session, the fantasy gaming sports is alive and well.
Yeah, that's HB 118. And it passed 126-32 yesterday, and it right now there was the Sam Mullins last year issued an opinion that said fantasy
he said fantasy
sports contests violated the state ban on gambling. This bill, what it simply does is it redefines the fantasy sports contest as a game of skill rather than chance. It just says it's not gambling because we say it's not gambling.
And where does that bill stand right now on crossover
day?
It
is passed the House.
Oh, it's already gone.
And is now in the bosom of the Senate.
The Senate will have it.
And the Senate will have to decide whether to pass on this.
All right. Lisa Rayum is back on the phone with it. Lisa, I'm sorry we had a bad connection a minute ago, but we're glad you could join us again.
Hello there. Yeah, I was saying a lot of hustle and bustle going on down here, as you can imagine. Standing in between both chambers and the hallways filled with lobbyists trying to bend the ears of lawmakers at the last moment. But, you know, earlier today, the big issue was, of course, campus carry. And you had a lot of people in the hallways gathered around the monitors listening to the debate, a bill that, as you know, eventually passed 118-63.
So that bill, which has gained so much attention for a second year in a row, will live for a fight another day. Yes, Lisa?
It will live. And heading over to the Senate, that some senators already expressing opposition. Senator Fort, Elena Parent, say they disapprove of the bill, but contend that it will likely pass. And they're banking on Governor Deal turning it down again.
Anybody on the table, what do you think? Billy, is this bill going to have problems in the Senate side, especially if the governor with this? We really haven't heard the governor weigh in this year. So I'm not sure what's going to happen on the Senate
side. I think the NRA is too strong in the legislature. That'll certainly pass the Senate. It'll be on the governor's desk again. And I certainly hope the governor shows the same courage he did last time, because it's beyond me, and I think most Georgians, why anyone would think that we're going to be safer to have college kids walking around with handguns.
Lisa, what else are you following down there?
Well, of course, you know, casino gambling, we thought that was going to breathe new light early this morning. There was a hearing scheduled before the Regulated Industries Committee at 1 o'clock, but by late morning that had been canceled. A lot of people thought there was murmurings that it was very unusual to have a hearing on a bill on crossover day that late in the game. And Senator Beach, you know, kind of said last week he didn't expect it to go anywhere again, but there was some talk that it was going to come to life again, so that did not happen.
But it's now pretty much gone. I mean, I assume...
Yeah, it's dead, for the most part.
Okay.
Right.
All right.
It is dead.
We've been another bill that's attracted some attention. It's been lower on the radar screen, but you know, this eminent domain bill that would open the door for pipeline construction in Georgia it's been one that there are a lot of people downtown watching very carefully. Have you followed that? Do you know where that's headed today?
Yeah, very, very quiet in the halls today. That was SB 191, and it passed with very little fanfare, very little debate, and as you intimated, it involves setting rules on how pipelines can be built and operated here in Georgia. But it did pass early this morning.
It was amended to include, there were some concerns from environmentalists. They wanted a 50-foot barrier between any pipeline and the shoreline of the state, just to protect the marshlands. What they got instead was kind of an 11-county buffer. That's just about the same thing. That was a key win for them, I think.
All right. Hey, Lisa, I know you've got a lot of work to do down there, and I know you'll be on the air live with lawmakers tonight at 7 o'clock. I bet the session will still be going on when lawmakers comes on the air. So
they came in prepared for a long evening, and I hear late into the evening. So, yes, we will see, but we will be here for sure.
Thanks so much for joining us. Lisa Raham,
for sure.
You'll watch her tonight, I hope, on Lawmakers on GPB television. A couple. Jim, we have said throughout this session so far, this is a no-drama session in many ways. In past years, on Crossover Day, we would probably have a list of 15 bills that we thought really were of interest to the public and that should be talked about.
And you would have lobbyists three or four deep along the ropes outside the Senate and House chambers, and it's not quite it's very low key there, but there still are quite a few very important bills. One that may be tackled late tonight in the House, watch for it, is a bill that would require slap a sales tax on Uber rides.
Yeah, that's a 4% sales tax
4% state tax.
Yes.
But the counties and the cities would be able to pile on as well, which means an Uber ride within the city of Atlanta with, I think, what, 8 or 9% sales tax, that would be the most heavily taxed Uber ride in the country.
And of course, what's interesting, Julianne Thompson is like, oh wow. I don't want to pay that much to take my Uber or Lyft. Of course, this comes on the heels of the fact that Uber and Lyft have just been recently allowed to pick up passengers at Hartsfield International. Their payday is apparently maybe on its way to be coming in at the legislature, Julianne.
Well, they have become such a part of the American fabric since they've come into existence. I never take a trip to Washington, D.C. that I don't use Uber. I mean, I use them constantly. And I think you're correct. I think they've become so popular that the government feels like they've got to have a bigger piece of it.
There was a time when, not too far ago, when Republicans would not raise taxes on anything. And this is very surprising in such a dominant Republican-led legislature.
Well,
they're so willing to raise taxes.
But actually, this kind of fits a long-term Republican strategy, which is to tax more services and back off property taxes a little bit more.
Yeah, I think we should remember this.
Shift to a consumption tax rather than
that is very regressive.
Well, yeah, it is sort of a consumption tax. You're right, Jim. But at the same time, it hurts the industry. It hurts the Uber and Lyft industry. And those, well, I shouldn't call it an industry. It really is an individual type type of thing. And I just don't think it's a good idea. And I'm very surprised that our Republican legislature would lead on this.
We do want to point out that this Republican legislature also this session has moved forward on the bill that puts a sales tax on internet purchases, which has been a long time coming and one that's been fought here over the years past.
And they want to cut taxes for yacht owners. So their priorities are very, very odd.
Yacht repairs. Let's be very specific.
Yacht repairs.
Yeah. Now, you know, okay, so Republicans, let's talk about that for a minute, Billy, because I think that's one of the language you just used is worth considering. This is a measure, if I'm right, Jim, that says that anybody with a but with repairs or retrofitting of $500,000 or more,
right,
will get a tax break on those repairs. Now, the argument that the sponsors of that bill have made is that we don't have enough boat repair operations in Georgia.
No, they're all going to Jackson. They're all going to Jacksonville or up to Charleston, and that we need to get our share.
Okay, so Billy, you're the kind of guy who can afford $500,000 worth of repairs. What are you complaining about?
Well, I just think it's an example of the priorities in the legislature today that they're concerned about yachts and yacht repair owners, but yet they're willing to tax Uber drivers. I just think that's very troubling.
On the other hand, oh, go ahead, Julia.
No, I was just going to say I agree about the Uber drivers thing. I'm not sure where I really stand about the yacht situation. It's above my pay grade. But I was going to say I have mixed emotions about this internet tax because brick and mortar businesses have been suffering for so long, as opposed to Amazon and some of the online companies. And, you know, so I have very mixed emotions about that. And I guess that is something that you could, you know, you would also look at as a consumption tax versus, you know, if we're trying to get away from income tax. So
there's another money bill that's out there today, Jim, and that's a bill that relates to Delta Airlines.
Yep, a 45% sales tax exemption on jet fuel purchased for trips from Atlanta that go out of state.
And a legislature that's been pretty accommodating to Delta, unless it's Earl Earhart looking to punish them.
Well, this is they're trying to reverse Earl Earhart's punishment of them that I think happened, 3 years ago or so?
Oh, I think it was during the religious liberty fight,
right,
when
it was,
Delta
Delta CEO said some things that indicated he was not on Earl's side on that religious liberty debate. And I think on the transportation sales tax, I think. So Earl, this was just a little bit of get back, if you will.
And Delta Airlines, by the way, is the largest private employer in the state of Georgia.
All right. We're going to take a break and come back and talk about other business. A little later in the show, we'll check back in downtown at the Capitol to see if there's any movement we need to tell you about. As we go, this isn't part of today's activity at the Capitol, but we did get an email from a listener who may not want me to use her name. But she asked for an update on the progress on the cannabis expansion bill. She says her husband has neuropathy and intractable pain, and he really needs this. This is moving forward. The Senate passed the expansion of conditions.
No, the House.
I mean,
passed,
the House.
The House passed the doubled the number of conditions that could be treated with cannabis oil. Unfortunately, intractable pain was removed from the list.
It did end up being removed from
the
list.
Yeah, that and PSD, PTSD.
All right. Well, all right. We've got a lot more to talk about on the show today. We're going to take a look at the 6th District congressional race, which is really getting interesting. A little later, we'll talk about what's happening up in Washington. It's 3:24. This is Political Rewind. We'll be back after a very short break.
Peter Sagal here, and if you're in your car, I want you to try something. Roll up the windows, you're all sealed inside, take a good smell. Can you smell that? That was the great cologne experiment of 2004. You should not have gone with the dollar store for that one. Well, you can lose that old car smell by donating your vehicle to one of your favorite causes, like public radio. It only takes a few minutes, and just like that, you've supported this station, and well, you are on your way to a life of better smells.
Go to gpb.org/cars and thanks.
You're listening to Political Rewind here on Georgia Public Broadcasting, an 18-station radio network of GPB. I'm Ellen Reinhart. GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University, the largest university in Georgia and one of the largest in the nation.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. I'm Bill Nigut. I'm joined today by Democratic strategist, political insider Billy Linville, Republican strategist Julianne Thompson, and political writer for the AJC, my partner, Jim Galloway. You're writing your column for Sunday. What are you working on?
I'm writing on sports fantasy contests.
Oh, all right. So you gave us a little preview.
That was a little preview.
All right, good. We'll look forward to that. Before we talk about the 6th District race, Julianne, a couple of interesting little stories about Georgians in the news in Washington. One of them is sort of lighthearted in a way. Jim, you and Greg Bluestein reported on this, but I'd like to get your take on it, Julianne. The president complained, tweeted this morning, that he is disgusted with Democrats on the Hill who are not getting his cabinet nominees confirmed as quickly as possible. Galloway Political Insider blog had this headline: "Dear Donald Trump, Sonny Perdue's paperwork is in your desk." No, the left-hand drawer. Apparently, the Trump folks are holding back our own Sonny Perdue's confirmation for a Secretary of Agriculture. But he's not going to have any trouble, is he?
No, I don't think he's going to have any trouble at all. I think he's going to be one of the cabinet nominees that pretty much sails through. I'm very excited about Sonny Perdue. So proud of him.
Probably the least controversial, other than the VA appointment.
Yeah,
I think. I think he's got good Democratic support. But seriously, Pat Roberts, over in, the chairman of the Ag Committee,
Kansas,
said that the problem is that the White House hasn't conveyed Sonny's nomination papers to the Senate.
Okay. Well, we'll watch how that goes, but we do expect him to be confirmed. So let me throw out one that's much more serious. We're going to talk a bit. In fact, why don't we just do it now? Because I was about to tell you an item from Johnny Isaacson's telephone town meeting last night. We all know that people have been clamoring for town meetings around the country with their legislators. We had one town meeting here, Buddy Carter. Held one.
He had about five, actually, down on the coast.
Yeah,
a series of five.
Right. Mm-hmm. He was the only member of the delegation. Mm-hmm. Johnny Isaacson was getting, Jim, a lot of pressure to do one himself. I was at an event the other night where there were a bunch of demonstrators outside, mm-hmm. about 30 people with big signs saying they wanted a town meeting with him. He did a telephone town meeting. It was very controlled. They only took calls from pre-selected people. But he made some news,
right now, and just as a point in his favor, he did just have come off back surgery. He was in the hospital 4 days last week, and is still recuperating at home, I think, as we speak. But yeah, he did make some news. He said that Donald Trump ought to release those income tax returns.
Well, you know what? We can actually play you what he said. Let's listen and then talk about what this means.
The best antiseptic for disease is sunshine. If you have sunshine shining on and you have full disclosure, you'll always have a better government or a better business than if you don't. So I agree with you on that.
Are you calling on the president to do those things for disclosure?
I haven't called on the president to do it because I was working in another campaign when I could have had the opportunity to do it. I wasn't working in his campaign, but if I get a chance to work in him, I don't change my opinion. That's my recommendation, not to all people running for office. The public has a right to know. There's no question about that.
Julianne, right now he's an outlier. Do you have any sense that this is the beginning of perhaps a movement where more Republicans might call for the president to release his taxes?
I don't know. I'm not really sure. There are a lot of people that wish that he would like the senator said, to shine a light on it and kind of move on to the next topic. But I have my doubts that that's going to happen anytime soon.
Actually, Bill, to answer your question, a couple of other Republicans have. Mark Sanford of South Carolina and Walter Jones of North Carolina.
They're
still outliers. But their argument is, and this could be a crucial one, when you have two intelligence committees looking at what's going on, you know, your basis, that's one of the baselines of your investigation. If you're looking at connections between the Russians and the Trumps, is the income, is business ties. You have to be able to get a handle on who Trump's business partners are.
It strikes me that this is one of those issues that will continue to haunt the president. It's certainly had no impact on his election. I mean, it was the Democrats hammered him on it over and over. The media hammered him on it over and over. It didn't stop him from winning the White House. So it's questionable just how much impact it might have.
This is in a way, this is kind of like Obama's revenge for the birth certificate issue, because that was nonstop through the first 6 years of his presidency, And finally, Obama did release his birth certificate.
Well, okay. So, but my question is, what, you know, Julianne just said it, Billy. What the Trump family, I can think it was Don Jr., said, people wouldn't understand it. It's too complicated, and they'll go after all sorts of things in there. But if there's nothing to hide, why not just get this issue off the table?
Because I think there's clearly something to hide. I think that if he doesn't voluntarily turn it over, that eventually down the road, his tax returns will be subpoenaed, because this investigation appears to be growing and growing and growing, and there are just inexplicable links to Russian intelligence, Russian government officials, and the Trump campaign, that I think that he's going to be forced to turn it over.
Well,
we're not going to talk about the Russian investigation.
No,
yet.
No.
So
let me think about how I'll answer that. I think I'll go back to what I said before. I think that the more that you shine the light on something, like Senator Isaacson said, the easier it's going to be. That being said, whether he releases them or whether he doesn't release them, whether the left sees them or not, they're still going to continue on the witch hunt. So it's still going to happen, whether they're released or not.
Well, once they're released, there's no more witch hunt.
No, I think he's right. I think that the president's family is correct. I think no matter what is in there, no matter how complicated it is and how legal it may be, it will be picked apart.
All right, let's keep on the Isaacson town meeting for another couple of minutes. He was also asked about his feelings about the friendly relationship that the president seems to be trying to strike with Putin. Here's what he said.
Anybody that grew up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s remembers the development of the Cold War, the old Soviet Union, and the testy times we had for so many years. I didn't trust Russia then, and I don't trust Russia now, and they've done nothing to say that they deserve that trust. I know there's some questions going on now about the Trump administration, how much the Trump administration dealt prior to his election with the Russians or what their relationships are. I will stay on top of that issue to make sure that the Russians have no favorable treatment, no special treatment, and they're treated as anybody else should be who's declared the things they've declared against us, and that's somebody we have to watch very carefully.
All right. Well, certainly there are more and more voices like that on the Republican side of the aisle saying, Mr. President, please be a little bit more cautious about the Russians.
Actually, it's interesting because if you were Vladimir Putin, basically what you've done is you've got a system of trying to insert yourself in the democratic operations of various countries, including the United States. I mean, that's pretty much settled fact now. But it's more true, I think, in Europe. And what he's finding now that he's created is an environment where you don't want to be caught in the same camera frame with the Russian ambassador or anybody else who speaks Russian.
Let's listen to one more thing that Johnny Isaacson had to say. We know that right now the House certainly has with the Senate cooperation, Republicans, they have apparently a health care plan. They have held it very close to their vests. There was an interesting video. Senator Rand Paul went scurrying around the Capitol trying to find this allegedly secret plan. It certainly hasn't been made public. You may have seen him standing at the door of the room he claimed the plan was in. He was turned away, and he got a lot of attention for that. But it's clear that we are going to see certainly repeal happen sooner, maybe now, than people were beginning to think. And maybe there's a plan in place.
You're going to see movement. I don't know that you're going to see the repeal.
Because fair
you've
enough.
Got, you've got, I mean, I think the House will be passing something.
Oh, here's what Johnny Isaacson said about what he thinks the plan should look like.
There's going to be a proposal to use tax credits to offset the cost for those in need, either because of age or because of income, to have subsidies to help them with their insurance. Tax credits have been used for years with low and moderate income housing tax credits, been used with the earned income tax credit. It's a positive way to see to it that an individual gets financial help in a meaningful way to help cover the cost of an essential item. That's going to be very important. But it's also going to take some significant reform of the ACA by taking away many of the required coverages that were mandated by the federal government and return the essential health benefits portion to the states.
Billy and then Julianne, let me get you in the loop on this. You know, some of the folks in the Trump White House have quietly been saying, maybe we should back away from anything. Maybe we should just let ACA collapse on its own of its own weight, and the Democrats will own it. Our plan, we're the ones who own it the minute we really do repeal. And then, of course, the other side of that is that's the biggest promise that was made by Republicans in the election campaign.
Well, Republicans run the Congress and they run the White House, so they own health care. And I predict it's going to be the biggest issue in the off-term elections. I think that tax credits would be a disaster for the Republicans. I think that any fear that you give the American people that they may lose their health insurance is part of the reason you're seeing so much activism at town halls across the country. This is such a delicate issue. And I think that they've got to be very, very careful about how they deal with it. I think they would like to wait until the midterms are over, but I just don't think they're going to have that luxury.
When Democrats and Republicans play political games with health care, it's the American family that suffers. Republicans ran on repeal and replacement, but they also ran on the fact that they promised to keep pre-existing conditions, they promised the age 26,
yeah,
and they promised working with states to be able to buy, to pool these different states together in like interstate compacts to be able to buy insurance over state lines. And they're going to have to keep their word. They're going to have to keep their word, and they're going to have to go the extra mile and work with the states as far as all of those things are concerned. And they're going to have to work with the states on other issues like CON reform if they're going to see.
On what reform?
CON reform.
Certificate of need.
Of need reform.
But the only way that they can keep the pre-existing clause in there is they've got to find a way to
pay for it. Right.
And that's what the mandate does, is pay for the pre-existing
Right. We heard Johnny Isaacson endorse tax credits, and that's where I was going, Bill. That the House version will Paul Ryan will try to pull something together. I think he'll probably pull something off and send it to the Senate. The problem is that you've got the Rand Pauls and the Ted Cruzes in the Republican caucus in the Senate who don't want tax credits, who are opposed to anything like that. They say that's just a continuation of the mandate of the federal spending by another name. That means that the Senate Republicans are going to be two or three or four votes short, which really increases the Democratic hand on that side.
Julianne, how worried do you think Republicans ought to be about trying to come up with a plan that, first of all, two things. How worried should Republicans be about the fact that President Trump has promised this will be, everybody will be covered, it'll be cheaper, it'll be better? First, that promise alone strikes me as one that really puts Republicans in the hot seat.
Well, I was always bothered by the fact that there were never any specifics. And I think that there were quite a few people that were, I think, in our realm of political thinking. But John Q. Citizen heard things are going to get better, and they were okay with the fact that there were no specifics. But the fact is the president ran on repeal and replacement, and he made those promises. And thus far, he's kept the promises that he made during the campaign. And I just have to believe him that he plans to keep those. Whether or not Congress is going to be amicable to doing some of those things, I'm not sure. But I think the fact that he's got Tom Price in there as Health and Human Services Secretary, who knows how to work in Congress since he was a congressman and represents the president, I feel good about it. So.
The president has kept his promises. He has certainly, with his executive orders, certainly, which have slowed down now, obviously, but in that first rush of a couple weeks, he issued a lot of executive orders that addressed a lot of issues during the campaign. we're all waiting to see whether there's any substance on the bones of those executive orders, right?
That's true, yes.
I mean, that's still, we don't know quite where that's headed. They're more like statements of intent, which does fulfill, I guess, the first part of his campaign promises. Is that fair enough?
I think that's fair.
All right. So let's do this. Let's get our second break out of the way and come back and let's do what I suggested earlier. Let's talk a bit about the 6th District congressional race. This is Political Rewind. It's 341.
Shirley MacLaine's amazing acting career has spanned 6 decades. Now at age 82, you'll find her in small budget films like The Last Word.
I'm part of the independent filmmaking culture. We don't have any money to make films. It's all about the writing and the characters.
Indie film star Shirley MacLaine on her latest movie, The Last Word, on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered is this afternoon from 4 till 7 on GPB.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. It's crossover day at the Capitol, and it's Russia Day here at the Georgia General Assembly. In a little while, we'll talk about Washington. But, Jim, let's start. We have to talk more local politics. We got a great race shaping up in the 6th District. All the candidates lined up, 18 of them, to replace Tom Price in the House of Representatives. Yes?
Right. We've got, what, 5 Democrats, 12 Republicans, and of the balance of independents. Some big names. The Democrat, John Ossoff, is the kind of the surprise. You have a lot of ranking DNC types lining up behind him as he's a young fellow, former Hank Johnson aide, and he says that he's got a lot in pledges. We'll see if it turns out to if he can cash in on them.
Yeah, you know, he came out of nowhere, Billy. I'm wondering why Democrats have decided. I get that he worked for Hank Johnson. He also, I think, at one point had worked in, is that right, John Lewis's office? Did he have some relationship with John Lewis? But what is this all about? We don't know much about this guy.
Well, I think that the Democrats need to be very careful and pick their own their fights that they can win. You know, this is a 60-40 district Republican, 60%. And, you know, the Ossoff might have an opportunity to make the runoff. But I just think we need to be realistic in terms of a Democrat winning that district.
I agree. I believe that the Republicans are going to win that district. But let me say this. I enjoyed the attack ad, not because I would have enjoyed it if it would have come from the other side, too. And the reason being is it kind of took us away from the ugliness that was 2016. And it gave us kind of an old fashioned attack ad that was based on old video. And it wasn't ugly.
Let's set this up. Democrats, you know, we got Ron Slotin as a Democrat in there. He's fairly well known, he used to be. He refuses to get out. Apparently, he's been under pressure, but he's saying, no, I'm going to stick in here. But, Jim, apparently Republicans think Ossoff is the guy, the Democrat, to beat in this race, too. We're going to play the audio of this internet commercial that was put together by a Republican PAC. You'll get the gist of it. What you won't see are images of John Ossoff dressed like
a college student, probably 19 years old or so.
Right.
Dressed as Han Solo.
Han Solo, talking about Han Solo, playing with lightsabers. His shirt is off at one point. I kind of agree with Julianne. It's sort of a fun spot. Let's listen to it.
John Ossoff really wants you to think he's ready to be in Congress.
I've got 5 years of experience as a national security staffer.
There's just one problem. Ossoff wasn't exactly fighting against terrorism. He was fighting against restrictions on cake parties. You see, Ossoff was just a college kid, doing things like dressing up with his drinking buddies and pretending to be Han Solo.
I'm Han Solo, Captain of the Millennium Falcon.
John Ossoff, not honest, not serious, not ready. Sorry, Johnny, but the truth strikes back. Congressional Leadership Fund is responsible for the content of this advertising.
I want you to be very clear here. Republicans are accusing a male college student of drinking beer and chasing girls. That's what's happening here.
You know, Ossoff, yes, that's exactly right. They responded. They put up an ad. In fact, they've now got three ads up. Again, these are, Billy, you point out, these are digital purchases. They're not on TV at this point in the campaign.
I think
cheaper
it was,
that way.
I think it was a tactical mistake for the Republicans to do this. I think it only elevates John Ossoff as a contender for the seat. And it was very frivolous. So I think it was probably a mistake.
Let's just listen briefly to the Ossoff response.
He's a relentless warrior against corruption. John Ossoff. As a national security aide with top secret clearance, John Ossoff saw waste and abuse by military contractors and fought to stop it. As an investigative filmmaker, John Ossoff took on corrupt foreign officials who were stealing U.S. tax dollars and helped send them to jail. If anyone can shake things up in Congress, it's John Ossoff.
I'm John Ossoff, and I approve this message because Washington should be accountable to you.
Okay, now what you've got here is I mean, Ossoff has got a long road. I mean, his odds are against him. But if he wins that seat, he would be the first millennial member of Congress from Georgia, right? And if you're a millennial, that means your life is on YouTube. It's all out there, and that's what this is real. That's what I find really interesting.
That's
about this.
A really good point. That's a fascinating point. Julianne, it was pretty clever to pick up on the Han Solo allusions in the attack ad and talk about him as a warrior for things that people all agree.
I thought it was a fun attack ad. I didn't think it was cruel. I didn't think it was personal in nature. I just thought at the end, my husband and I were watching it, and at the very end of it, it said, you know, it said, he is not this, he is not that. And then we both looked at each other, and I said, but he sure looks fun.
Well, I would say, if just as a word to future candidates out there, if you are 17, 18 years old, and you like to dress up in a Darth Vader mask without a shirt, then take all your iPhones and put them in a basket.
Right. Greg Bluestein, are you with us down there at the Capitol?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can. Yeah, we hear you. Do you hear us?
Yes, I do. And by the way, just a point of clarification, we were told after running that story that the shirtless character in that ad was not indeed John Ossoff.
Really?
Oh, all right. Point in his favor.
You know, another dirty Republican fake ad, Julianne. Hey, Greg, we want to get just a minute or two with you. You seeing anything new down there that we should know about at this point? It's 3:48, and they're moving toward the end of the day.
They are. The House just added about 30 more bills into its calendar. It's looking like a very late night here, but the Speaker says it will end before midnight. You might have already mentioned this, but the casino bill that was revived briefly looks to be dead again.
Yep.
Calvin Smyre told me the plug has been pulled on it once more, and the Speaker said it looks like it's a 2018 debate. Otherwise, campus carry passed after an emotional but kind of a brief debate. And everyone's gearing up for some surprises for later tonight. The lobbyists, everyone I talked to down on the second floor and the third floor, just don't know what's going to happen, but they're gearing up for some sort of surprise.
Where does the sales tax on Lyft and Uber stand right now?
Good question. The Uber and Lyft people are pretty much resigned to the fact that it will pass at some point tonight, but they think that they can block it in the Senate. Lyft has flown in at one of its top lobbyists from San Francisco, and Uber has a whole team here in Georgia. So they have really staffed up down at the Capitol.
All right. We also talked earlier about the fuel tax break for Delta, and that seemed to be kind of hanging in the ether somewhere, too.
Yeah, I mean, last I checked, it was still expected to pass at some point. I was at a Rules Committee meeting. Delta had maybe five or six lobbyists in that one meeting alone. So they have really doubled down on getting that measure passed. It's not as expansive as it used to be for them, but it's still a top priority for the airline.
What are you going to file on? Do you know yet for tomorrow's paper?
Oh, well, I've already filed about seven stories.
Of course you have. You're Greg Bluestein.
including that John Ossoff story. By the way, no one Google me and YouTube videos because I'm in the same boat. But Casino Bill and the Campus Carry Bill are two of our biggest stories, today.
All right, Greg Bluestein, keep up the good work down there. Thanks so much. We'll see you when you're back on to Political Rewind next week. Take care.
Thanks. See you guys soon.
Okay, let's talk Russia. Just a toss-up question. I, frankly, having watched all the coverage, read every newspaper that I get, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, New York Times, I'm still trying to wrap my arms around the Jeff Sessions story, Jim Galloway. His testimony seemed to be that he never met with any Russian when he was in his confirmation hearing. The question becomes, was there rhetoric that was being parsed? Was he lying?
Okay, I don't even know what to make of this. The first thing I think you have to do is just mentally remove Russia out of that. Take Russia out. Jeff Sessions sat in front of his colleagues, especially his Republican colleagues. He was asked a direct question, and he gave an insufficient answer at best, a misleading one at best, a deliberately false one at worst. And that's the worst part for him and his relationship with his Republican colleagues.
Now
you put Russian into it, and then we can go to town.
You know, Julianne, it's interesting because to me this is whether he would recuse himself was the big story all day yesterday. Members of Congress on both sides of the aisle saying he's got to recuse himself. In sort of a similar way to my question about the Trump tax returns, by the time he gave that news conference yesterday late afternoon, I think, like a lot of people, I was thinking, well, of course he's going to recuse himself. That's such a no-brainer thing to do, and at least it removes one of the attacks on him, right? And he did it.
No, I'm glad that he did that. And I think that it is unfortunate that he answered the question that Al Franken asked. That was the person that asked him that particular question. But I also think that you need to listen to that question in its entirety from Senator Franken, formerly of Saturday Night Live, and the way that the question was posed to him and the way that he answered it. I don't think that knowing Jeff Sessions the way that I do, I have no doubt in my mind that he was not intending to lie. I believe that he answered the question the way that he did, saying, I don't know, I should know what cabinet members have done because I am a cabinet nominee and I certainly never met with them. And I don't think he was saying that he's never in his life met with a Russian ambassador. I took it to mean that he did not meet with them as a cabinet nominee, as part of the campaign. But I think it's very, very important before he is tried and convicted by the court of public opinion, that you listen to the entire question by Al Franken and the entire answer by Jeff Sessions.
Is it possible, Billy, that in fact, there are a lot of people who agree with Julianne when they listen to the way the question was framed. People should do what Julianne suggests, but there are a lot of people who now think, in some ways, that's irrelevant, because Sessions will now be called to testify again. There's no question that he's going to have to go back up on the Hill and answer questions about this episode in its entirety, and that's now where the rubber's going to meet the road, yes?
Yes, he clearly stated under oath that he had no meetings with any Russian officials, when in fact he did have meetings, and it's inconceivable that Attorney General Sessions would not recall meeting with the Russian ambassador on two occasions in July and September.
Well, let's say the first meeting was the Russian ambassador came up to him at the end of a talk he gave. There were a group of people there. I'm wondering whether that truly qualifies as a meeting or not, Billy.
Well, certainly the one in September does qualify.
September was
a meeting
in his office in the Senate.
Right, and it's inconceivable against the backdrop of all the Russian hacking that was being reported at the time, that the Attorney General did not recall that meeting. It's beyond belief that that would take place.
Jim, did the Democrats, some of the Democrats were relatively restrained. They said he should recuse himself. Nancy Pelosi, did she go overboard? Did she really?
Oh, I think so.
I mean, she yesterday morning, before this had all played out at all, called for his resignation. That's just the kind of thing that Democrats will
And I believe, did Chuck Schumer do the same?
No. Schumer was much more restrained. Schumer gave
he said he
should recuse himself. We'll watch how this plays out. But if Democrats overplay their hands on it, before the show started, we were kind of joking. Whatever happened to the notion of letting your opponent, you know, fall over on his face unaided by your intervention?
Right, right. And look, you know, I mean, I hate to say it, but the Trump administration has really gotten off to a slow start in getting control of the federal bureaucracy. And the last thing that they need, maybe we need, is a search for a new attorney general right now.
Well,
that was a little bit over the top there.
It's hurtful for the Trump administration as well, Julianne, because the reviews he got for his joint session speech a couple nights earlier were pretty spectacular. I mean, there was a lot of commentary on the fact that some of the things he said were not provable, but nevertheless, Democrats and Republicans alike were sort of relieved that he struck a tone that suggested he's ready for the job, and then day later, this thing hits him in the face. And he makes it worse without hearing the details. He tells reporters, no, I don't think he needs to recuse himself. And then Sessions does.
Yeah, it's... it's a bit of a PR problem. I mean, there is absolutely no doubt about that. But going back to something positive to say about the president, his joint address, I was extremely happy with, and most especially the way that he began it. I thought that that needed to be said. I thought it needed to be addressed. And if there is one thing that you know, I think there's so many of us that are desperately looking for things that our nation can be united on right now because it's such a divided country. But if there's one thing that we should be united on right now, it's this condemning of hate and bigotry. And I thought that the tone that he struck at the beginning, condemning the terroristic attacks against the Jewish community centers, was definitely the right thing to do.
Julianne Thompson, you got the last word on today's show, and a message of unity. I like that's a good way to end it. At the same time, I think we have to say, Jim, as we run out of time here, this Russia story is going to get bigger and bigger, and it does threaten to swallow the Trump administration whole, whether he's personally involved or not. Yes?
Yeah, watch the Senate. Watch people like Johnny Isaacson.
The people who might be moved one direction or another, unlike, say, David Perdue, who has marched lockstep with the president
right
throughout. All right. That's it for today's show. Billy Linville, Julianne Thompson, Jim Galloway, so glad you could be here today. We're going to get into a much deeper look at what's going on in Washington in terms of Russia, in terms of the other Trump activities up there, what's going on the Hill, because Monday, Tamar Hallerman, your colleague in the Washington Bureau of the AJC, is going to be with us by phone. Jim, you'll be here. I'm looking forward to that show. In the meantime, we didn't get to your tweets at PoliticsGPB because we had so much to talk about, but keep the conversation going when we're off the air, and we'll be reading your tweets and seeing what you have to say. I'm Bill Nygut. We'll be back on Monday at 2 o'clock.